Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
Captain Kirk and the ineluctable Mr. Spock. Welcome to Motherlode, gentlemen. Interested in purchasing a little love?
We're interested in you, Harry, for fraud, illegal drug manufacture, and swindling.
As I said, welcome to Motherlode, a charming planet which does not recognize Federation law.
So you two can keep out of this. All right, Mudd, you've got a deal.
Are you aware that Harry Mudd is tricking you via an illusion?
What?
The so-called girl is a Regillian hypnoid projecting a simple illusion.
Now, friends!
We can't arrest you, Harry, but you can give yourself up.
No!
Thief!
I surrender myself. Free will, mercy of the law.
Okay.
Get this, guys.
Yeah, it's got
We're starting
it.
A podcast.
Yep. All right.
Not yep. a new podcast.
No.
We're starting this particular episode of the podcast.
Next week.
We're getting right into it.
No, okay. This week.
Right here.
Now.
Right now.
Doing it.
Episode 113.
All right.
What episodes are we covering this week? We're covering two episodes, aren't we?
Mudd's Passion.
All right. Jesse, you called out Mudd's Passion. Star Trek, the animated series. Season 1, episode 10.
Terraton Incident.
Are we recording live?
We're recording live. We're just getting right into it.
Yep.
Got to get right into it. None of this faffing about. None of this effing and jeffing.
Fliffing
and
floffing.
The paraffin incident.
No, the Terraton
oh,
incident.
Oh, not the paraffin.
Dilly dally.
It's funny.
None of that.
It's like a wax-based joke. Dan's rocking out with some like wax-based humor. Paraffin wax.
It's better than a wooden joke.
That's what I thought you were going for. Perhaps I'm giving you too much credit. So it's got Star Trek. That's the podcast. Episode 113. That's the number of the podcast.
You know what you're doing.
Mudd's Passion and the Terraton Incident. These are the episodes we will be covering today.
These are the episodes that we'll be covering today.
As the man said.
It's nice to get back to some TAS because we don't always talk about
I love talking about animated series.
It's a nice show.
I love talking about it for a variety of reasons. One of the reasons is because it is, for many fans of Star Trek, it is the neglected franchise. It is the one that people maybe only vaguely half remember from watching as a child, maybe on Nickelodeon reruns or on first run when it was airing.
I remember a lot about it, and that was like my first exposure.
And it was my first exposure to Star Trek as well.
And they were allowed to get into some far out shit.
The animated format let them do some crazy stuff.
The animated stuff is interesting because it's Filmation, like has been mentioned many times before, where Filmation reuses character animations. And I want to know, like, did Filmation? I'm assuming they use the same animations across different shows. Okay. Now, did they make, who knows? I'm curious to know if they just made all these pre-made animations from the start of the inception of their company. That was the first thing they did, was just make a bunch of animations. And since then, they've just been reusing them and recycling. I want to know how often they made a new animation. You know what I mean?
Well, they recycled a lot of stuff.
Do you think it's like, okay, season two, we'll have six new animations this season, you know? And like, that's how they did it.
Because, you know, the bridge always looks like the bridge, and they're always kind of sitting in the same spot. And, you know, they're always going to like.
I dig that stability.
Yeah.
Probably as a child, I dig that stability. No, but
they always do. Visually, it's totally like,
They always do the shot.
Sucks you in.
It does. They always do the shot where they're far away and they're running off silhouetted in the distance.
Yeah, I love
and then there's the scene where someone starts running at someone else, and it's like this frontward slow running thing that happens. And they're also like running at the screen all slow. And then at one point, but then in the Mud's Passion episode. Kirk does something that I've seen them do.
Last week, we discussed a Mud's episode.
Yes, we did. Last week it happened.
Last week.
It happened Mud's last women. Week.
It was a week ago
so
today.
It was, they did the move that I've seen Kirk do before, but He-Man did all the time, where he did this roll out of the way, like one of those rockazards or whatever.
Yeah. Rotoscope.
Was swinging at Kirk, and he rolled away.
He just
up to his old tricks, just citing technological, technical names for things.
Filmation.
And so it's like the most anticlimactic action scenes, because suddenly it cuts to this generic shot of someone rolling and some weird object flying through, and then the monster hitting a wall that is very obviously a different color from the rest of the wall. So you know that, oh, this is the part of the wall that's going to break because it's slightly darker than the rest of the wall. But then got me thinking, though, to Tarantin episode especially.
Man, this guy's on a fucking roll. We're starting a podcast, and Dan's like, I'm starting the fucking podcast.
I was thinking the backdrop of the Tarantin one with the flowing lava and all that shit going on, that looks like they could have reused those too. I wonder if any of those backdrops were like from, especially the Tarantin used in like He-Man or something, because it looked like a foreign planet.
It's a goofy planet with like crystals, growths like everywhere.
Exactly. Right. So back at the ranch. I just wanted to get that out.
No, this is great. This is what people listen for.
This is why they tune into us.
This is why they tune into us.
They tune into our signal.
Are they gonna start slow this week, or are they going to get right to it?
They're just going
to
start going.
This is one of them get right to it type of weeks. With none of the dilly-dallying, Effin and Jeffin.
Effin and Jeffin.
The other stuff, you know.
It's very natural.
But what...
You sound like you're talking about masturbation.
It's perfectly natural. This is a perfectly natural podcast. Part of the point I was getting at earlier is that the animated series deserves attention. If you haven't watched it, check it out. Watch it. It's worth watching. And there are a few reasons why it's worth watching. One of those reasons is many of the stories are actually super fucking interesting, really clever sci-fi ideas, some things that they couldn't possibly do in live action, certainly not in the 60s, right? And the animated format gives them a little bit more leeway.
They can draw all sorts of neat stuff.
Another reason is that there's lore that gets referenced in future stuff.
Yeah, now, there's a lot of good lore. And as much as I joke about the Filmation stuff, there is something surreal and kind of neat about that whole setup.
100%.
And the backdrops are amazing too. I just love all the drawings they do for the background.
Yes.
It really takes you out there.
And if you like Lower Decks, then like Lower Decks like really like takes a lot of
it does. And Lower Decks is fantastic, but there's something, maybe it's also just because it's from a different time period. The TAS really makes me feel like I'm in some weird fever dream.
It's real surreal.
It is aided by copious lashings of snake weed.
It's Star Trek from the 70s.
It is Star Trek from the 70s. It's got the jive music. Lots of positives about it. However, I think it's important as honest podcasters, as honest people, that we do point out that despite the many positives of TAS that make it worth watching, every now and then, you get an episode like, and I don't know what Dan thinks. I don't know what Jesse thinks. But in my view, this Mud's Passion shit is some ridiculous, stupid bullshit.
Well, I was thinking back to
particular episode, the Tarantin incident. When we get to that, I love that one. That one was great. I thought this Mud's Passion shit was some dumb, weird. Like I was frustrated watching this.
Yeah,
episode.
It was dumb.
Well, it's silly.
I kept thinking about the other one, and if my description can't bring up the memory, but what was the other TAS episode?
My description can't bring up the recall the memory.
The one with why is Spock so big?
Yes, exactly.
Why is he so big?
The infinite Vulcan. But see, that's a great episode, even though it doesn't. It's ridiculous.
It doesn't make any sense half the time.
No, it doesn't. But there's something that works about. I think there's something that doesn't work about this Mudd's passion.
Well, first of all, I mean, was it Christine Chappell? I'm surprised she didn't get fired.
Yeah, no. Like, so I think a key factor here
is...
She fucking
drugged her superior officer.
Yeah, okay. So in this story, Harcourt Van Mudd, he was...
I mean, it doesn't matter if the officer's superior or not. It was you fucking drugged someone.
He escaped his prison, and it's actually, I think, a very well-done comedic exchange between Kirk and Mudd, and as well as Spock and all that, you know, where Mudd is basically explaining what happened to him, you know, since he last saw them.
When was the last time? Was it I, Mudd, or something was the last time?
I, Mudd, would have been the last time they saw him. They saw him on TOS.
Yeah.
But the point being that, like, this plot is that Mudd has love potion... Okay, that's what it is. It's not a sci-fi story.
Yeah.
It's not like a sci-fi thing. I mean, I guess you could argue,
they have love crystals that they interchangeably refer to as crystals sometimes and capsules
the other
time.
But you have to pop open the crystals to get the love juice out.
Yeah, sometimes they're called...
You gotta smear the love juice on yourself.
But it's like, that's not how crystals work. But then they call them...
It's not a mechanism of action for drugs. You don't drug somebody else by putting the drug on you.
Yeah, right.
I mean, yes, I know you can put poison on your lips. And
right.
My point here is
doesn't
this
seem
is,
to make sense.
This they're using a more fantastical, more literary plot structure here than a sci-fi.
Well, when
plot
they
structure.
Describe the looks of it, they describe it as a crystal. But when they actually describe the mechanism of pouring it on yourself, they describe it as a capsule that you break open. So it's like it takes two
and
forms
it just looks
of,
like a crumbled up piece of paper.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And the other so that's the plot is that Harry Mudd. That's what he's doing. He's up to his old shenanigans again.
Harry Mudd.
This time it's with a love potion. They encounter him.
Was his accent a little different? Was it the same actor?
It's the same actor as Roger C. Carmel.
It wasn't. He wasn't being like an Irish pirate.
Yeah, he wasn't being quite
and
as
because,
intense.
And
like,
as I mentioned last week, he drops that Irish accent.
Not this week, last week.
He drops that Irish accent partway through that episode we discussed Mudd's Women last week.
Purely
coincidentally, by the way.
Yeah.
We did not mean to have a week of Mudd.
It sort of worked out.
It took me a minute to get my memory back into place, getting into this Mudd zone again, since it's been a whole
the
week.
Mudd zone.
This plot.
You got Mudd butt.
This fucking plot. This guy Mudd, he's got a love potion, but we later find out that he doesn't seem to think the love potion works. Okay. So he's scamming people.
He doesn't even believe in himself. He's
and
such
it's,
a fucking
and it's
con
a weird
man,
double like... scam because like in the end we find out the love potion, the whole gag, which is again, this is out of mythology, the idea of the double-edged sword, the monkey's paw, the thing that doesn't go quite the way you think it's going to be.
I wish I had a monkey's paw.
In this case, as Spock puts it, he's like, you know, a few minutes of love for many hours of hate.
You know,
they already have the monkey's paw, but like for some reason they characterize Mudd as not believing in it, but he kind of seems to believe it. As it's confusing, but anyway, the thing I'm getting at is that I just don't accept the fact that Nurse Chappell would fucking do this shit.
Yeah,
I think it's so out of character.
Yeah.
Not just for Nurse Chappell specifically, but for Starfleet people more generically.
Yeah.
And although on TOS we have seen examples, there's an existing lore and history of Nurse Chappell being in love with Spock and Spock and possibly loving her back just naturally in his own Vulcan way. So they're playing with this.
She's seeking for like artificial love induced by a drug. First of all, then she like,
and
tries to unwittingly drug him. But then when you brought up that point about how Spock was talking at the end, his little, what's it called? His
ain't nothing little on Leonard Nimoy.
His punch, his jab, his jibber jab, his jibber jubber.
No,
what's it called?
Not with all right my Christine.
When he goes,
is everything all right?
Yeah, not with my Christine. No, when
the
Spock
woman
goes,
I love.
At the very end, so after she does all this, and at the very end, Spock goes, "May I help you record this confession, nurse?" And she's like, "You'd be the last person I'd choose."
Yeah,
she gets fucking pissed at him.
Yes.
For like all this shit,
she poisoned him, even though she is both.
She's
a Starfleet officer, a professional educated person, and a scientist.
And she got mad at him when they're...
Who knows that this is a ridiculous thing?
And she got mad at him at first. Well, she got more mad at Mudd, but she was frustrated with him when the potion didn't work at first. And now she's... But Spock did great. That last line was great when he goes, a few moments of love paid for with several hours of hatred. Then he goes, your potion is scarcely a bargain, Harry. There's something about that line that was just like really...
There's a lot of great lines.
It's pretty awesome.
I forget a lot of them, unfortunately, but there are a lot of great lines in this episode. Spock in general, Leonard Nimoy's depiction of Spock understanding that he's having some problem with his emotions and trying to like talk his way through that I thought he did a wonderful job. But yeah, the fundamental fact that Nurse Chapel drove how this plot went, I thought was annoying.
I'm always sort of annoyed with Nurse Chapel because I've seen like the Cage and the same actor played like the first officer, and then they just demoted her to like
nurse. Consolation prize.
And then later they demoted her to just like some crew member's mother. And then,
well, eventually she in Star Trek One, she's a doctor.
She's more of a character.
Well, they make her she's a doctor at that stage in Star Trek the Motion Picture.
Oh, really?
Okay. And on the one hand, that's cool. On the other hand, it's depressing that in 1979, that's like a whole scene where she's all like, oh, I'm a doctor now. And they're all like, well, isn't that curious that you're a doctor now?
So, you were talking about like Mudd being a swindler. For some reason, he didn't use the best thing he could find to test his, to demonstrate his potion on in front of those was a Rigelian hypnoid.
Okay.
Why would he
I like that.
It was funny, but it just, once again, it's like, wow, you've got something that can completely change the appearance
of
this thing.
What the hell's a hypnoid?
Why? Doesn't it seem like it's more difficult to train an animal to do what you're trying to get it to do than just like hire a human to
exactly.
It's like a ferret lizard.
Okay. So,
and then, what was that thing? And that was on planet Motherlode.
Motherlode. Yeah. What the fuck? Yeah. This has been all 3 years of TOS coming up with all sorts of clever names for planets that are not dumb, and even most of the animated series they have like clever names like Motherlode, and it's a fucking mining planet, you know, because it's like a load, a mineral load.
There's so much mining.
A strain of it's a lot of more mining. Mudd's always hooked up with mining concerns. Yeah. It's crazy.
But you know
what's going on here?
I mean, and if you're a swindler like Mudd, if you're a con man, the first thing is you need a plant, and your plant. Meaning like somebody you have in the audience who you can use to trick other people. And somehow it's easier to train and change the appearance of a Rigelian hypnoid.
I did like again, as much as this episode frustrated me, just because fundamentally, I think, okay, backing up.
Oh, and no, by the way, on Motherlode, there was wolf people and people too, which is interesting. I don't know.
Weren't there some like lizard people too or something?
They're trying to marginalize the proletariat.
Yeah, basically. Well, so, okay, just to back it up for a second, right? I think we've discussed in the past, when we've talked about the animated series, we've discussed how in some cases it seems like even in good episodes where there are issues, it's because it seems like they've taken an hour-long story and crushed it down into, you know, half an hour or, you know, 45-minute story, turned it into a 20-minute story.
Sometimes it works out that way just with the animation versus the live
sure,
action.
But there's a lot of, in terms of the editing and the story pacing and stuff, sometimes it feels like they have so much interesting story to tell that they've just they try their best to squish it down. Totally. This is I would argue that Mudd's passion is the fucking opposite. They have like two jokes that are funny, and they stretch it out into an entire episode that requires them to make all sorts of people like, have to act like the fucking fools.
It's like there's like people dancing in like the transporter room, and like,
well, I'm surprised
Scotty's like gonna get with that like cat chick.
Well, see, I'm surprised. I'm surprised it took them that long to get to that part of the plot where that gets into the airstream and infects everybody. You would think that would be one of the first things that would happen in order to fill up space in the episode is to like have all the crew get all drugged up on love.
First, you had to have Harry Mudd. Trying to sell his magic love potion to these miners, and he talks about, I forget the quote, I don't know if one of you wrote it down, but where he's basically talking about like, I'm paraphrasing, but he's like, how the fuck could a bunch of ugly motherfuckers like you get somebody to fall in love with you, somebody worth it? You need a love potion. And one of the monster aliens is all like
they were like sort of canine apes or something.
Yeah, it was unclear. I dug it all. The other thing that was weird about that colony they were on Motherlode was it's only one shot. It's one angle when Kirk and Spock are showing up and they're watching Mudd give his little speech. There's one angle where it looks like there's like a future gremlin car, you know, like that old gremlin, like parked there, like a future version of it. I don't know if they just figured on Motherlode people would be driving cars. I don't. Maybe it was a shuttlecraft. Who the fuck knows? Strange business.
I was trying to find the part you were talking about, but
much you failed. That's all right.
True love is worth any price, Captain. $300 because he's charging 300 credits. No, by the end, he should have. I wonder what the credits are on that planet. There definitely wasn't gold pressed latinum.
300 credits.
Yeah, they get to that voice.
And I think that's James Doohan. James Doohan does most of these extra voices.
Oh, I think he did the voice of in the Territon. I think next episode. I think he did.
He does a million voices in all episodes.
He does all the voices that aren't like Spock or Kirk or McCoy. Right.
Like in that, he does that billion 3 billion year old alien spaceship creature where it's like so lonely.
Like,
yeah.
And then it, like Majel Barrett and Nichelle Nichols do the other voices.
Yeah. And they sort of alternate.
Yeah, yeah.
I love how Spock is always so so snarky.
He's very snarky. Yeah.
He was talking about like
example incoming.
Example.
It's coming up. Dan is typing furiously.
He goes,
he's doing word searches in a document.
It's in my brain. I'm just typing to find my brain.
Jesse has a physical notebook that he takes his notes.
He goes, Kirk, at the beginning, Kirk goes, do you think Harry Mudd is down there, Spock? Spock says, the probability of his presence on Motherlode is 81% plus or minus 0.53.
Phrased extremely strangely.
Yeah, and then McCoy goes, why can't you just say Mudd's probably there? And then Spock goes, I just did, Doctor.
Yeah.
You know, it's classic Spock. I love
and in the deleted scene, there's just like 5 minutes of them just beating the fuck out of each other.
Now, does it seem like there's more of this sort of like Spock-McCoy bickering going on in TAS than in TOS?
No, there's a lot in TOS.
It's the same.
There's a lot in TOS. We don't always interpret it the same way.
It's a whole lot. Yeah.
Well, actually,
it comes across a little differently in live action.
Actually, yeah, in last week, so when we did last week, there was the whole exchange at the end where McCoy was talking about how, like, is it canon that Vulcans have their hearts on the side of their chests because... Didn't you remember?
That may have established it.
Yeah. I don't know.
Spock says something about his internal organs being arranged differently than McCoy's pleases him to know.
Yeah, he says the fact that my internal arrangement differs from your doctor pleases me to no end. Yeah.
What the hell did that mean?
Yeah, like I guess he just means he's not like a human. He's just
trying
shitting
to stick
on
it
him.
To him.
Oh yeah, that's when and Kirk goes to McCoy goes. That must have been quite a talk you made down there. Ever try considering? The patent medicine business, which I guess is the snake oil business, and then Kirk all disses on McCoy, goes right back. He's like, "Why should I work on your side of the street?"
Yeah, I like fucked that up. Line.
And then when Spock goes, "I'm happy the affair is over," a most annoying emotional episode. I was wondering if that was some kind of meta joke about like the subject of that Mudd episode last week. I don't know. I thought that was it probably wasn't, but you know, it seemed like. You know, emotion.
Interesting that you should bring up stuff that we talked about last.
Well, I was just thinking about all the stuff that we were talking
Mudd.
About.
It's Mudd stuff.
Well, we were talking about Mudd and how Spock and McCoy always like jibber jab at each other.
Yeah.
And you know,
Mudd zone.
Yeah.
Oh, a little tidbit here. That
tidbit.
The fellow who wrote this was I think it was something Candell, Stephen Candell.
Yeah, yeah.
Something along those lines. He wrote Mudd's Women. I'm Mudd.
Yeah, Stephen Kendall.
And then he wrote this story. And he was actually intending to write a third Mudd story that because Star Trek, the original series, was canceled, they never got around to it. All I know about that story is that it was titled Deep Mudd.
Whoa.
I don't know what the story was going to be about, but that was...
I mean, you can only imagine what they probably wasn't going to be about, but
Deep Mudd, about Harry Mudd.
He wrote for a bunch of old TV
term,
shows.
Deep digging somebody?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking
about. That was what you were implying with your eyes?
Yeah.
It is an audio podcast. Dan was just giving me these eyeballs that conveyed deep digging.
That dude's actually still alive. He was born in 27, but he's
who are you talking about?
Stephen Candell.
Oh, yeah, because I was Roger C. Carmel. Is no longer alive. He died at like 54 in the 80s. There's all sorts of rumors about how he died. Ostensibly it was heart thing. We're not rumor peddlers here, even though the rumors are quite interesting, but I recommend if you have an interest in seeing what some of the rumors were, just type in Robert C. Carmel rumors, death rumors. Some interesting ideas as yet unconfirmed about how he died so young.
Oh, more of Spock being Spock. This is and Christine Chapel being Christine Chapel in this episode. When she goes,
Spock being Spock and Chapel being Chapel.
She goes, I think you deserve congratulations for trapping him so cleverly. And Spock goes, you exaggerate, nurse. Kindly see that your medical summary is more precise.
Yes.
It's like, get a clue, Spock.
Yes.
Or maybe he knew and he was just being polite, but I really think he just needed to get a clue.
I think knowing what we know of Spock, in the full context of Spock, I think we can allow for both things to be true, that he does love Chapel and he was really into her complimenting him, and simultaneously was aggravated that she had exaggerated. Exaggerated a fairly
simple. So him being smooth and him being precise, like we're at odds with each other.
Arguably not even at odds with each other, existing simultaneously on slightly different planes. That's the wonderfulness of Spock.
Man, she needs to be more professional, because, you know, taking strange potions from known criminals in order to fall in love is like day one stuff.
It is day one stuff, and she is more professional. That's the aggravating thing about this episode.
They already know about Mud. Sense. They've already had two adventures with Mud.
Christine Chapel prior to this and Christine Chapel post this is not portrayed in a way that she would act in such a, not only unprofessional, but presumably like criminal, illegal fashion, right? You know, we're fairly open-minded here, but poisoning other people to manipulate them into being your love slaves, I think qualifies firmly in the not cool category.
Especially if it's Spock.
And they even mentioned in this episode how last time they met Mud, it was he stole a spaceship. Apparently, this was an iMud.
He's always stealing spaceships.
Yeah, and then
loading them up with chicks.
And then
robot chicks.
And Kirk says he's
drug enhanced chicks.
And Mud's pussy wagon.
Love potion chicks.
And Kirk was saying that he sold Starfleet Space Academy to a planet or something.
Oh, yeah,
he meant Starfleet Academy. He just misspoke.
But I mean, still, like, I don't know what's going on. I need to see that episode.
Some shady
again.
Business.
Yeah. So Chapel shouldn't be trusting this guy.
I don't know why she's trusting him in the first place.
I like that Eric's guy's playing that kind of lute. That's like,
oh yeah,
like three
Eric's
arms.
Is always awesome.
It didn't sound like he was playing with two extra arms, but it was a pretty awesome instrument.
And he always talked like this. All the aliens talk like this.
Also, yeah. James Doohan.
Captain.
Incorrect. Is Eric James Doohan plays?
Yeah, that's Eric's, also James Doohan.
Yeah, James Doohan plays everybody, basically.
And there's no
buddy.
No Walter Koenig.
Yeah, no Walter Koenig.
So, and apparently when you...
they almost didn't do the show because they didn't... Because, like, there wasn't... They didn't... whoever the producers were didn't want Walter Koenig.
Everybody make fun of the way he talks.
Okay, I'll do it. Yeah, you talk funny.
What, because he was they were worried about communism or something?
I don't know. Probably.
I recall vaguely reading something somewhere that the audience can confirm to us for us through research that Walter Koenig was planning to write an episode. I think, or maybe he did write an episode.
Yeah, he did.
I think he did.
I think we may have discussed this.
Yeah, we talked about that. Yeah. That's probably why I remember, because we've been doing this podcast for a very long time.
Nurse Chapel's sweet summary.
113 episodes.
113.
Dear lovely
lucky,
Christine.
Lucky 113.
No, not with my Christine.
Yeah.
My favorite Spock line in this whole thing was, Nurse Chapel's sweet summary.
Yeah, that's what I just said, actually. I just said
that. Did you just say that?
I just said that.
I heard you say something else. Yeah.
No, I said, well, because afterwards he goes, dear lovely Christine. Man.
That's a faux pas.
I know. I agree. I think that's
it's
funny.
It's one of those hilarious podcast faux pas, because you're like, you just totally weren't listening to the other guy.
It's okay.
That one guy wasn't listening to the other
guy. Hey, look,
those guys were going off on their own direction.
These guys smoking a bunch of snake weed? What's wrong with these
Okay, you're not helping my point that I'm trying to argue for your point, your side here. I'm saying...
Maybe in the future.
On the other side of it...
Maybe in the future.
On the other side of it... The reason you didn't hear it was maybe because I was interrupting while you were talking. But no, we know that it's you are interrupting me while I'm talking and subsequently not listening this to what I have
those,
to say.
This is the style of this podcast. It's one of those...
It's funny. Yeah, it's a funny thing that we do.
No, it's one of them...
it's our thing. We do this. This is our thing.
It's got disrespect.
Really.
No, it's one of them mutual interruption podcasts, you know?
It's one of those mutual interruption podcasts.
No, because there's style. Some people don't like that. I understand that. Sometimes you want to listen to like the history podcast, whatever. People are stating their facts, and then another person states some facts, and they do an interview.
I can't stop thinking
something
about mutual masturbation now.
Well, there you go. That's also this type of podcast where that topic may come up.
Yeah.
All right.
So,
What about mortuary masturbation?
I don't know, bro. I kind of draw the line somewhere around there. When he was talking about the planet that they ended up at, he says the atmosphere at surface was 800 millibars.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a real measurement?
Yeah. I mean, 1,000 millibars would be one bar.
Millibars.
One atmosphere, I believe.
Oh, it's
is
like
a bar?
It's like a barometric.
It's a pressure.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I probably knew that at one point and totally forgot.
I mean, it's not something you necessarily need to...
Yeah, unless you're like a ship's captain. Or
your
something.
Line of business is a hitman.
I don't know how to use an abacus either.
A meteorologist.
Yeah. Or a fartologist.
Befartist.
A befartist. So wait, at one point, Mud takes Christine Chappell's ID and
Mud's
like...
passion.
Yeah.
And like... Mud's passion.
He like... Mud, he takes her ID and he puts
Mud's
it.
Passing.
Oh God, damn it.
I know he uses her ID.
This just takes so much longer.
He puts his picture on her
ID. Right, like why would he even bother at that point? Somebody looking at it for 2 seconds would say, "Wait a minute, there's something wrong here."
You're not Christine Chappell.
This is a stupid episode. It's a really stupid fucking episode. It's so dumb.
It's so dumb.
And I'm surprised because when you look at the reception of this episode, most people don't give it like a 5 out of 5 or nothing, but generally it's like a 3 out of 5. People are like, oh, this is like a good, you know, if you
they said
you
it was good
anything.
For like continuing the Mud thing. It,
yeah, I mean, I like seeing Mud, except in this version of Mud is somewhat more sinister and evil. Yeah. First of all, I think
he's like Neelix.
Yeah, it's drug. Yeah, he's more like Neelix, just an evil motherfucker traveling around the universe causing trouble.
It's interesting. Space creep. It's interesting though. This is about drugging other people to make them, or drugging yourself to make other people fall in love. I don't know. It's
drugged
making,
by God.
It's making other.
No, by Baldrick, actually, but the effect is much the same.
It's kind of similar in a way. What was this? So she rubbed the stuff on
herself.
On herself?
And then she touched.
She got in his lap.
She touched Spock, and then she fucking jumped in his fucking lap in a weird way.
Yeah.
Like,
so this is actually, in some ways, it's similar to Mud's Women, except, right, it's more sinister somehow, because Mud's Women involved a person taking a pill and becoming more attractive to everybody.
And they
but
were with
one...
Mud voluntarily, even though he was abusive and there were a control issue, you know, there was a bad situation there. The women were putting up with Mud as a means to an end that they desired. Now, as we commented last week, the end was heterosexual marriage. But nevertheless, they had some agency. In this case, you're taking agency away from somebody by putting a blood potion.
instead of being attractive to everyone, you're forcing someone to be attracted to
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mud That's what like, makes it more sinister. And plus, Mud is just drawn more sinister in this episode. There's something about his face that's like
horrifying. He's got like a like some kind of like admiral's coat on or something.
That too.
Mud is like some kind of
with like a rose.
He's some kind of metaphor for advertising
for Advil.
For advertising
ibuprofen
for advertising culture somehow, because he's like trying to push on this standard of beauty, and he's trying to like trick the men into thinking that they need this beauty, like, you know, and he's pushing all the drugs, and he's some kind of there's some kind of metaphor for
his shit's
how
always
it
relying
works.
On like dudes are horny. And I can make money off of dudes being horny.
And he's pushing these made up beauty standards and things like that. You know, I don't know. Maybe that's just art reflecting life or life reflecting.
Yeah,
or whatever.
The problem is that nobody's really pushing back on that. They're just like, you're going about it in an illegal way. You should sell these drugs in a store. You should get a license and pay your Federation taxes. We want our share of the credits.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Stop stealing spaceships.
Yeah, stop stealing spaceships.
She got mad at Mud for the bad drugs, so she chopped him on the neck.
Yeah.
She beat him up.
It was a whole ridiculousness.
And then drugs are whack.
And then somehow those drugs, and they shot him, and they turned into dust, and they went in the air vent and spread throughout the ship. Like that, somehow they turned into dust.
Yo, that means they're really old.
Yeah, and then when everyone started falling in love with each other, you got all these. And now I did enjoy there were jokes here that were worth it. And I can imagine that the writer, Stephen Kandel, maybe had this image at first. He was like, how about this? How about we get Scotty and that cat chick flirting with each other? And that cat chick's going to do all sorts of like, and she's going to scrunch up her face all
Scotty's
weird.
Scotty's going to start singing.
Yeah, and Scotty's going to be all like, talking about not drinking scotch, but still having a hangover. And Scotty, by the way, looks like a fucking ghost. Like, I don't know, there's something about the skin tone they use on Scotty in the animated series makes him look like a ghost. And I think it's offensive to Scottish people. They would put such a pale pallor on his face.
Mudcall referred to her as a poppet. A poppet is like some kind of doll.
Poppet. Yeah, a poppet is a doll.
Is it like a moppet?
Yeah. They're all surprised when Spock falls in love. That makes, like, how do Vulcans fall in love? Have we ever gotten pinned down exactly how this works?
They don't ever admit to like love itself.
They got their arranged marriages and their pond
but
falls.
They're still all about like having families and stuff.
Spock is half human, bro.
And, well, because like in Enterprise,
and he is half.
Well, in Enterprise, you have the relationship between tick 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 tick. Trip Tucker, and
Tucker's chuckles.
I like that you're referencing Trip Tucker has evolved to the point of incomprehensibility.
You sound like George W. Bush.
And to Paul,
Trip Tucker.
And then also in J.J. Abrams' Trek in the Star Trek Beyond, or is that what it's called? The third Star Trek.
Never heard of it.
You're talking about Spock and Uhura.
Yeah.
Oh right.
But
yeah.
Spock is a half human again. Okay. I mean, you always got a factor.
Well, then T'Pol, and
even though I don't like this whole dividing people into the little chunks of this and that, it's not like you're half human means you get half the influence of human culture and half the influence of Vulcan culture.
Yeah, what if there's some recessive genes in there?
Well, it's not just about genes.
What about it's recessive genes? It's about khakis, too.
His sister is like Michael Burnham.
Not just about genes, it's about khakis.
Oh, this was a long way to a pun, but it was a good pun.
A good pun.
A good pun.
A good pun.
Your name in the future when society collapses.
Daniel Goodpun.
Yes, you're going to be Daniel Goodpun. That'll be your new name.
Goodpun.
Dan Goodpun.
Goodpun. So
he'll set up shop. You have like a little anvil where you sit and create your puns for people.
My pun shop
in exchange for goods.
Daniel Goodpun.
Whatever coin works in the future.
Give me a good pun.
Bitcoin, Ethereum. What?
That's not a good pun, Daniel. So, good pun. So why wasn't a good one?
So Ender. So T'Pol and fell in love. So how do we describe their love? You know, that wasn't arranged. You never know. It's weird.
Because of like they did some kind of pun.
I mean, yeah. In
the early Star Trek, they made it seem like it was impossible for as Mud calls him a Vulcanian.
Yeah. Oh, Vulcanian is a common thing.
Yeah. I've never heard that.
He was just being an asshole.
In TOS, it comes up, and I think in TAS as well. There's just like a few times where they refer to Vulcan. They refer to them as Vulcanians, which I suppose makes sense, depending on your perspective.
So
it's like saying Italian.
Well,
you're just kind of rubbing it in.
Getting back to old Emress, I liked.
Oh,
There was a point when Spock was all like basically saying he loved Chapel. He was basically talking all fancy to Chapel, right? He's like Chapel, she's so great.
Chapel, she's so great.
Spock's like Chapel, she's so great. And Emress does like the confused cat face. It's a few frames. It's a few frames,
yeah,
but it's like, you know what I'm talking about? And then it was it was in the same scene, but a little bit later where she does that scrunchy nose thing where she's kind of trying to figure out what's going on because Scotty's starting to act weird.
Right. Yeah. I thought she was sniffing at first. Then I was like,
it was more like cat, like doing that, you know, like when a cat smells something weird.
Oh, I know.
Like, oh, this guy knows.
I know.
When the cat smells your foot. On a bad day,
you either get Maress or you get Uhura. It's like they're on different shifts.
Yeah, they are on different. You very rarely get them at the same time.
That's a good point. So they went down to that planet. He took her hostage. We're not quite sure why he took her hostage. I guess to barter a deal of some kind to get away. I don't know.
This episode's stupid. As we just explained this, there's so much stuff that doesn't make sense, and the motivation and the plot.
By the way, didn't we say that this was a dumb
one? Yeah.
Yeah. So when they went down to that planet, first of all, there was this rock in the background, and it was very obvious.
It's a rock slug. It was a giant rock slug.
I thought was it the Rockadile or was it the Rockazard?
Well, there was the rock slug, and then there's the rock Rockadile.
Okay, so what you call the rock slug, I called the Rockazard. But
like a Charizard, yep, except
well,
a rock.
Well, that slug works just as well.
To me, it looked more sluggish.
Okay, so the rock slug. Trogdor. So this was even before it revealed the animated eye that was about to happen. But at first,
you could still see.
You could still see it was shaped like something. Then it cuts back, and you see like the discoloration, meaning, something's going to animate there, and then. So I thought that was kind of a hilarious scene because
it was crazy. It was crazy because this episode is stupid, and that scene was crazy because it's like you've got all this other stuff going on with a love potion, then all of a sudden it's like, you know what we need? We need a couple of giant rock monsters,
right,
to endanger Chapel and
rock
monster. So yeah, right, and the resolution was,
like I said, they're stretching out. They have two ideas and they stretch it out to fucking 20 minutes. So they're like, we got 5 minutes left to fill. What are we gonna do?
So I wasn't clear. They didn't
get a Rockadile and a rock slug.
So they didn't drug both
Rockadile.
They didn't drug both of the rock monsters.
I don't know what happened. None of this made sense.
I think what happened is they drugged one of them. The other went to attack him, and the other went.
They
to
didn't have enough of those bits. Like they only had two bits, and then all of a sudden, like he's throwing a bunch of bits up.
Kirk had like a bunch, and it's like, you could have saved some. Okay.
Wait. Let me just say what I think happened.
This is how
it's working out in my mind.
Okay. Listen to me.
One of them got drugged. Okay. And the other one went to attack Kirk and them. And the drugged one was like, no, you're not going to get my lover. And then that's when they got to work. And it was hilarious because when they start strolling towards each other while they fall in love, like the rock monster and the Rockadile.
Rock monster.
They're like all strolling at each other and they walk. It's all like pat, 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 pat. They're all tiny or something. And they're just kind of walking at each other with this weird sort of like look on their face. It's fucking goofy.
Super goofy.
When they walk towards each other to fight.
And the scenario that you've described, I also arrived at that conclusion in terms of trying to derive the most charitable interpretation of events. And I agree with you. The most charitable interpretation of events is that the one creature somehow fell in love with Kirk, and then the other creature wanted to attack Kirk, and the first creature was like, no, don't attack the person I'm in love with. However, it's not clear that Kirk, like that the rock monster touches Kirk, because like the rock monster takes the drug, doesn't appear to touch Kirk.
Right.
But you can assume that motivation, but or is it that the rock monster touches the other rock monster and falls in love with, that rock monster falls in love with the first rock monster, and then they're not actually fighting, now they're about to fuck, they're doing some rock
fucking. Like they didn't quite get that far or something.
Why are they not beaming out anyway? They make contact and everything seems clear about like, we need to beam out as fast as possible.
Yeah,
it could have been that the rock monster's like experience went right to the after effect where like you get to the hungover stage.
Yeah, it didn't quite work.
Or maybe the rock monster fell in love. It's touching rocks, so then the rocks.
They're touching rocks. Is that the new way to? touching rocks.
It's like touching cloth.
Bumping uglies.
So did they both, but we don't know if they both fell in love with Kirk and were fighting for Kirk's love.
Both.
See, the thing is the episode made all this. You could sort of guess at many different reasons as to why it happened, but they didn't get quite far enough to tell you exactly what was happening.
They did not.
So you could just sort of assume it's like, oh, some monsters are fighting. They got to get away.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Territon.
Yeah. Okay. Let's take a quick break because I think we've discussed.
Also, McCoy is kind of creepy in this episode.
Mud's passion.
When he's talking to that girl from Ops or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, and he's also talking about today. He was talking about that pretty little lieutenant Uhura.
Yeah. Everything he says is a little bit kind
of. You remember that episode of the animated series a few episodes back where they go to the amusement park planet, and at one point McCoy is all like looking at a southern plantation and like he's all like, oh the good old days.
Right. Yeah.
It's like a fucking straight up plantation. Yeah. Okay, anyway, Mud's passion. It's a stupid episode. We'll take a break now.
Don't bother.
When we get back from the break, Territon incident coming right up. All right, we're back. Time to talk about the Territon incident.
Yeah.
Season 1, episode 11.
They did a very male-centric thing on the last one. Speaking of,
you don't say.
They were talking about how it's only works love between a man and a woman, but men. But they were saying if two people of the same sex take the drug, they're just pals.
Yeah.
But if two people of the opposite sex,
okay, no,
that means
I'm glad you brought it up because even I'm presuming they didn't intend it this way, but the when Kirk and Spock were kind of hugging each other on the planet, I was getting mega homoerotic.
Yeah, I was
slash Kirk and Spock slash fiction vibes off of that. I was like, this is some...
That's what they meant. They were essentially doing that.
Do you think that?
I think they were doing that. And they just put
I'd like to think they did do that on purpose.
I think you'd like to think that they did do that on purpose.
I would like to think that they did on purpose
and
make it seem like Kirk and Spock were about to fuck each other.
What I want in my perfect world is that they were going about to fuck each other. But then the reason they had the line about how it's only... It only sparks love between man and a woman, and men and men is just close friends, and women is just close friends. I want to think that they had to add that in because the studio execs were fucking evil.
It was the
piece of shit studio.
And then they didn't want
to just let men have fun with each other. Sometimes it's fun to have fun with a dude.
A fantastic womanly quality.
It was before Woodstock.
Heal the wounded. A fantastic touch.
Okay. Next episode, season 1, episode 11, the Terratin incident.
The paraffin incident.
Yes, the paraffin incident. Uh-huh. So wax-based humor again.
my wax-based humor.
Waxy.
Typical Dan.
We're going to start calling you Waxy Dan.
Waxy Dan. I thought it was Waxy Dan Speed. What was it?
Goodpin.
Goodpin.
No.
Waxy Goodpin.
When society collapses and you make your living selling puns to people, your name will be your trade name.
Goodpin
Dan. Dan Goodpin.
Goodpin.
But for now, while society has, prior to the collapse of society, you'll be known as Waxy Dan.
Okay.
And that Dan is not that is not a trade based name. That is merely a nickname based off of something silly you said once. Long ago.
Right.
I mean, right now, but in the future, it will be long ago.
I can go with that.
It's like those, you know, like those Viking guys, and they all had nicknames like, you know, like Heavy
Bluebeard.
Heavy Hammer.
Yeah. Butt Fart.
It's like your legendary name. Dan Waxy Butt.
Do you ever listen to the opening of the Star Trek the Animated Series theme and think the end? It kind of sounds like... The very end of it sounds like Wheel of Fortune or something like that. Desi Lou Productions. You know, this episode was written by Paul Schneider from David Letterman fame.
Is it the same?
No, I don't think it's.
Of course, it's not the same one.
I was just playing.
No way, dude.
Paul Schneider. Come on.
What if it was?
Come on. Come on.
Paul Schneider. I'm thinking of the actor who played Mark Brandanowitz.
Mark Brandanowitz.
On Parks and Rec. Who's the one on David Letterman? That's a different guy.
Of course that is
guy. That's Paul Schaefer.
Yeah. And Paul Schneider plays, I bet it's neither of those people though.
See, this is where wax-based humor gets you, Dan. It pulls you down an incorrect path.
Some sort of
pulls you way down an incorrect path.
Confusion of.
All right.
Paul Schneider is, he was an American screen. Oh, he's dead.
Paul Confusions.
He wrote the Star Trek original season first season episodes. Okay.
But he didn't write all of them. Which one did he write?
Who wrote the Star Trek the original series first season episodes?
He didn't write every episode.
Stop yelling at me.
He wrote Balance of Terror, The Squire of Gothos.
Ooh. Oh, there's more to that sentence. The rest of the sentence goes episodes Balance of Terror, The Squire of Gothos. And he also wrote the animated first season episode, The Terratin Incident.
That's a coincidence.
He did Bonanza and Mr. Magoo.
Don't you like Bonanza?
$6 million.
You want to listen to a good podcast?
In New Jersey.
If you want to listen to a good podcast, turn this shit off and go tune into Bonanas for Bonanza with Andy Daly and Matt Gourley. A bunch of other people. It's good. Bonanas for Bonanza. They watch every episode of Bonanza.
You're not even making that up. That's for
real. I'm not making that up. That's full real. That's Bonanza for
Bonanza is actually a pretty fun show.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't watched it, but I don't have to because I just
Andy
listened
Daly's
to Bonanza's.
Pretty funny film.
Bonanza's for Bonanza.
I haven't seen many Bonanas episodes. For Bonanza. I've only seen a couple episodes, but they're pretty solid.
Right.
Or maybe I'm thinking of Gunsmoke. I can't remember.
You're probably thinking of Gunsmoke.
Yeah. To somebody, that's offensive. That,
yeah, I know.
The inability to make that distinction is offensive.
Do you think someone that old listens to our podcast?
Why would you assume somebody would have to be old to watch a television show? They're available to everyone, right?
It's less likely.
He wrote
likely.
For Buck Rogers.
True, it's less likely.
Buck Rogers
in the 25th dimension.
In the 25th.
Duck Dodgers century. In the 23rd and a half century or okay. whatever.
Tarentan incident, which we have not yet approached.
It's on Arachna.
This is all we're talking about.
Okay. A burned out supernova.
I really liked this episode.
Yeah. This was fun.
This was, I mean, okay. So it's more fun to talk about Mud's passion because it was so colossally stupid and there was a bunch of ridiculous shit. And some of the ridiculous shit was legitimately funny and intended to be so. This episode, though, I thought here is a return to an example of a story that's sci-fi heavy story. I think it's a clever concept, this idea of these people who generations ago, due to some sci-fi ridiculous concept, shrank down in size.
Right. And they were called Terra 10, but it all got like corrupted into
there's,
Terra.
There's aspects of miscommunication in there. There's a sci-fi element. The weapon they use to shrink the it makes sense in the context. I know it's ridiculous, a shrinking ray, but it makes sense in the context they provided.
And they were even giving explanations like the waves tend to wind tight such spiral molecules as dilithium. So that's why the dilithium was all like getting all weird because it was like the
peeling
double,
like an onion.
It was
spiroid. Radiation.
It was like somehow like the double helix or something like that. I don't know.
Spiroid.
He says they won't break. They'll just keep winding. I don't know. Kirk and Spock were all talking about like how it was the reason why the dilithium crystals got all fucked up.
The reason for
it was
the
same.
Season.
It was the same reason that they got small somehow. And I don't know how scientific it was, but it sounded pretty awesome. And it sounded like well thought out. If it's total bullshit, I don't care because it sounded like they really thought it out. Like, and I was like, yeah, that makes sense. Sure.
I like the gossamer mice.
Fuck yeah!
Halo fish.
There's some inviso mice they had
so
on the ship.
So what's great about it is they do the gossamer mice and then the halo fish. The halo fish was cool. But not impressive.
And they were keeping
it just
them
looked
in
like
cages
a fucking fish
that just had bars, and so if they got smaller, they just got out of the bars. But to me, why were they behind it like in an aquarium?
To me, it was so ludicrous that the order of events was we'll show these magical mice,
right.
They're like translucent mice. That we do see again, but it's not, you think you're like, okay, I'm seeing translucent mice. That must have some important plot element.
They get small and disappear and you can't find them. No,
they don't help in anything. They're just the clever, weird thing. They're just like, this isn't a fucking animated show. We can do whatever the fuck we want. But then to be like, okay, now we'll just show a relatively normal looking fish.
Yeah, right. It's like an angel fish.
And then when the fish fucking shrinks, I couldn't tell it was a different size. She was like, oh my God, look how much fucking smaller that's got. It's a tadpole form. I was like, it's the same.
You still
fish.
Couldn't tell. Yeah.
It's just the fucking same picture again. Jesus.
So they do they talk about how they weigh the same because they have the same number of atoms. It's just the space
which was
is reduced.
Cool. Science.
Didn't they do something similar in a different Star Trek?
Sure,
show?
Probably.
In DS9, when they shrank, wasn't there something about how the oxygen molecules were the wrong size? I don't know. I thought they did something.
Yeah, one little ship.
Yeah, in the But I don't think that's the same one. I thought there was something I remembered seeing where I was talking about how they're the same weight because they shrank in space. But
the main thing I remember from One Little Ship is when they're talking about how they have to wear like the environmental suits because if they breathed in normal sized oxygen, they would like tear them to shreds.
Yeah, because of the size of the oxygen molecules. So maybe they didn't. I swear, remember,
fishy,
I feel like. I remember hearing that somewhere. Maybe I just happened to see this episode again somewhere and I just forgot. But
maybe, man.
But that like the problem with that situation is that would increase the pound per square inch that you'd put out.
Pound for pound.
Pound for pound.
Are these women more beautiful?
Measurement for measurement.
So if you
Mud's women, reference to Mud's women,
so
listen to last week's episode.
Could you imagine
if you haven't already, go listen to last
could
week's
you,
episode.
Could you imagine something that's like an inch tall?
Sure. I can imagine something.
God, shut the fuck up. Jesus Christ. I can imagine. It's like you're getting so carried away.
Proceed.
We're all getting so carried away with ourselves.
Proceed. It's the animated series, man.
Just take a breath.
The animated series makes you go fucking insane.
Yeah. So if you were, you know, things that are an inch tall, if they weighed the same as you did now, or what Jesse did now, if you have an inch tall, tiny, skinny thing weighing this as much as a human does, and it stands on your chest, I don't think anyone ever stood on each other's chest. But if you did, for example, that would probably go through you like a knife or some shit, right?
Yes. It's a density.
It's the same principle as you could have like a neutron star, which is collapsed down. It's not quite a black hole, but it is so dense that a teaspoonful would weigh as much as the entire Earth.
Yeah, they call it, it's like the Chandrasekhar limit. I don't remember what it's called. But the limit.
There is a limit. They didn't know about that.
What's the name of that actor, Chandrasekhar?
Jay Chandrasekhar.
He's also a director.
Yeah.
Mainly a director who acts
in his
own
movies.
Yeah, those movies.
It's basically the density limit that if a collapsed star surpasses this, it can only get this amount of dense. But if for some reason it gets denser than that, the whole shit collapses and becomes a black hole.
It becomes a singularity, becomes a black hole. What are you going to do then?
What are you going to do?
You're going to get sucked in.
You're going to slurp up some of that Hawking radiation.
Get sucked in.
You're going to.
A Smurf is three apples tall.
You're going to reacquire some of that information that fell into that hole?
Three.
No, they're three apples. What the fuck are you talking about? Four apples tall? That doesn't even make sense.
Who has four apples?
Four apples.
You can't stack four apples.
Come on, man. I know it's late, but Jesus. All right. What were we talking about? Terra 10 incident. Terra 10.
I don't even know about that shit.
Okay, so I will say that, and this references a comment, Dan, that you've made a few times on previous podcasts about sometimes when they tell the story, but they don't have the other perspective, they don't have the alien perspective.
Oh, right, yeah.
And that is true here. And I can see how if this episode was a normal, you know, proper hour-long length of 52 minutes, whatever it was in TOS days, I could see them including the alien perspective, stuff going on the alien planet, maybe developing that a little bit more.
There'd be a little more back and forth.
Yeah, because what we get is, I give them credit, it's sufficient. It's sufficient for what we need to conclude the story. And so they instead they spend so much of the time focusing on the challenge of the crew of the Enterprise shrinking. Now, what I really thought was cool about this episode was that most of that was not played for laughs. Right? Can you imagine an alternative where they would have played this episode for goofy comedic laughs as the shrinking crew starts acting sillier, having sillier and sillier shenanigans?
Because it ends up like people are like falling and like breaking
their ass. Sulu like breaks his fucking leg.
It's hilarious. They keep tripping over dumbass shit. Like, Sulu gets knocked off by an egg timer. Like,
because it starts out with like Uhura's I just can't reach my shit.
She's all standing up.
The first is the engineers who are like, Scotty, we're trying to fix this shit, but the tools are too big to use. And Scotty's like, what the fuck are you guys talking about?
And now they like have to like take a grappling hook to pull the fucking transporter or whatever, you know. Sulu gets knocked off by that pin and that egg timer almost kills him, and then someone trips over like a needle or something. So there's a lot of those gags which end up being hilarious.
They are good gags.
When did people become so fucking clumsy?
But what's great about it is that they've got the gags there. It is a kid's show. They got the gags there, but the focus is on the problem solving, right? There's failures along the way. Like Sulu, for example, he gets obsessed with this idea briefly that he really wants to just like, let's just vaporize this shit, man. I don't want to deal with this.
Yeah.
And he gets hurt as a result, but that's part of the problem solving process.
Yeah. Sulu is being insubordinate.
Well, Kirk is all like, okay, we know we're shrinking. Spock has analyzed this. He's figured out how long until we can no longer actually push buttons and shit. So in the meantime, let's use that time to jerry-rig devices to help us control things even when we're smaller. That's smart. Yeah. That's just like proper, clever problem solving and working with the time they've got.
He's the captain, baby.
Kirk figures out the whole beaming down thing and accidentally figures out that corrects his size. And then
reason, why does he have a tiny tricorder? I couldn't figure that part out.
Yeah.
Why was his tricorder?
Did
they, in the meantime, they didn't have replicators back then, right?
No.
So
it's a little... technically,
they couldn't replicate uniforms because they were made out of algae.
Sort of, yes.
I mean,
retroactively, the rest of Star Trek has decided they must have had some sort of replicator.
It just seems weird that he had a tiny little tricorder in his hand.
You're not talking about his tricorder, you're talking about the communicator.
When he was down on that planet,
I noticed that
he
too.
He was regular size, but his tricorder was teeny tiny.
The communicator.
The communicator.
Yeah, right. And like, why did they have that?
My assumption.
Is the communicator made out of organic stuff?
No. My headcanon was the line Kirk has about jerry-rigging things to help them. is a catch-all line so that things like the communicator, they built that. They like built a communicator.
They built that shit quick.
Yeah, exactly.
And they would have to build a new one every 5 minutes.
You didn't build that.
If we allow for the retroactive addition to replicators, because they sort of, yeah, they never say they don't have replicators. They just don't say they do.
They have something similar.
They have food. They have food that comes out of like little slots in the wall and shit. We just don't see them like materializing.
Yeah,
but
their uniforms are some kind of algae. They didn't replicate.
Yeah, xenolon or something. Which I was looking up. Xenolon.
Yeah, I thought all the uniforms were xenolon.
Yeah, so they must have invented that for this episode because according to Memory Alpha, it's created for processing a form of algae. Starfleet uniforms from the mid 2260s to early 2270s. It mentions that the Territon incident is what it mentions.
I thought the idea of like algae based uniforms was super awesome.
No, I thought it was awesome too. It was funny though. They just invented it.
That's why they're so form fitting.
But it was so obviously
to make the plot make sense. So they don't have to worry about the naked clothes. Like just Kirk flopping his cock around.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was nice of them to explain.
Wrap that cock
but it was not. It was nice of them to not ignore it. You know, to try to explain it.
That's one reason why I like this episode. This is a classic Star Trek episode. There's a classic sci-fi conundrum. And it's all supported. The plot is supported by various techno babble and other sci-fi concepts they come up with.
And the way they approach the issue at first is you don't really know that there's a specific problem. It just begins with them sort of checking the shit out. And in fact, it's all about how a starship would work as a unit to investigate an unknown situation.
Unit.
Because the beginning, Kirk is he's all talking to Spock. He gets bridge reports from Sulu and Eriks.
Spy word radiation.
Spock. He goes engineering, Scotty. And he's
Scotty.
Like, and he's like, they're purring like happy kittens. And then for some reason,
Like happy kittens.
And then that's weird because he talks about happy kittens, but then Kirk talks to sickbay and asks them about like their animals for some reason, so I don't know. It went from kick side,
and they were there gossamer rats or something.
Gossamer mice.
And it's great. I like the reason that line works so well is Kirk is going, like you said, he's going through each of the major departments and asking what their status is, and he gets to the medical department.
How are those gossamer mice?
But yeah, and that's the great part. It's like, are any of the experimental animals displaying any odd things? And McCoy's just straight up like, oh no, the gossamer lice look fine. And as you know, those mice. Motherfuckers, they tweak the fuck out if anything's just like slightly weird.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so it was.
Do they become more solid? Like, what happens to them? How you can tell? It's like, oh no, they're all like super translucent, so those motherfuckers are right as rain.
Wait, was that the halo fish? What did the halo fish do?
The halo fish changed color.
That was they changed color. Okay. Yeah. So
again, less impressive than the gossamer mice, which apparently changed like opaqueness.
But it was like hovering like in the air.
I like that. That whole exchange was kind of, they could have abbreviated it, but they didn't. And I like that they didn't. I like that they took the time to calmly go through, okay, check this part. Yeah. And then after,
problem solving.
And after some shit got fucked up, they were like, anyone hurt? Eriks. Uhura does some damage reports. Sulu gives an update. Spock gives an update. No casualties from Sick Bear Engineering. And it's more of them working as a unit. And it's taking the time out of the episode to show them working like as this unit.
This
team.
Is something that the
unit
the,
team.
The new kid focused Star Trek Prodigy has done on multiple episodes where they take the time to be like, you know, it's a different style, of course, different editing style, but there is still the focus paid attention to this idea of problem solving and getting the facts, figuring out what the situation is. And if you don't do that, there's some sort of drawback. There's a punishment that comes with not taking the time to consider what exactly is going on.
Yeah, and then the approach of discovering what was going on, it was like, all we knew is there's a mysterious planet. We don't know that what's going on, but we know something's going on. So they're just, you know, investigating it, inspecting it. So in the words of Scotty, it says, you sound like you're blathering, man, but I'm actually giving very cogent points about...
I agree. That's why I'm listening with rapt attention and not responding.
Do you remember that part where Scotty said, you're blathering, man?
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
No.
Remember that time?
Did you think it was annoying when Nurse Chapel fell into the aquarium?
Yes, because she kept saying, like, help, help, help.
You
could tell they were just looping that sound bit over and over.
Yeah, and Nurse Chapel is not, these two episodes are examples of Nurse Chapel not being treated well in the animated series.
Yeah. Yeah, the
70s. Come on.
It was weird because she fell in the fish tank, and it sounded to me like she said help clearly, but she was still underwater.
Boop.
Like, how could you?
Boop.
And it's like, how are they going to miss, somebody falling into the fucking aquarium?
Yeah,
it's going to take them a while to get there, but, they know she's there.
I wonder if they had a cetacean ops on the original Enterprise, if they had some porpoises.
Yeah, they maybe.
Some porpoises, some
They would have done it on porpoise.
All the tools, sir, they're too big for us to handle. You sound like you're blathering, man.
Yeah, I mean...
Spock, are you slumping? I have never slumped in my life, Captain.
Yeah.
But I was about to ask you the same.
All those jokes are stupid, but they work because they're shrinking. And they're shrinking for a rational reason because of the crystals that have the spiral on
from the spiroid.
But no, it's the reason, though, the reason the crystals went spiroidy, it was the same reason their DNA or their atoms went spiroidy. Well,
there's your problem right there. Your crystals have gone spiral.
It was like a macro version.
They've gone all spiroid.
Oh, by the way, speaking of macro, they had what they called a macroscope at the end. Okay, a macroscope. It's not just a microscope that is large in size. That's a telescope. Yeah. A macroscope doesn't actually exist. A macroscope would take a big object and make it look smaller. It would take something that was too big for you to see fully and make it small enough that you could see the whole thing fully. I don't think they have anything like that.
The device that Kirk was using at the end to talk to these people was hilarious. It was ridiculous.
And it was like this crowd of little people, and it was like...
And they all talk like this.
Hello, little people.
So, the Mendon, I think that was...
We are proud people.
That was hilarious.
Where's my crew? And they're like, here we are. We're over here.
That was, fuck you.
I couldn't... So, he goes, I'm the Mendon of all the city. Equal. He goes, equal in command to yourself. We are people of pride, Captain. Equal to your own. We neither offer...
It's like,
and he goes,
take it easy, little
guy. And he goes,
guy,
we neither suffer insult nor give apology for actions. And it's like, was that supposed to be some snarky but sort of self-deprecating way for the little leader dude to disrespect humanity?
Basically, y'all can go fuck yourselves. We're going to do what we want to fucking do, man.
Yeah, it's like, we're like you. We're a bunch of pieces of shit.
Yeah,
we only care about ourselves.
Shit. God damn it.
Don't tread on me.
We're super lame. We're super lame, just like you, Captain. It was supposed to be some kind of commentary on people. But I think that was James Doohan, I think, played.
Of course. I mean, but one can
he
assume
did all
that.
The voices.
One can assume if
how
it wasn't
times
one
I'm
of the main
that?
Voices, it was James it Doohan. Wasn't...
For all the attempts they made in this episode to be all, explanatory and scientific and all that, they never gave the little people high-pitched voices. They even went so far as to say, "Oh, big people are too loud for our tiny ears."
Yeah,
but they didn't make the little people talk all high.
They didn't make them talk like this.
They didn't make the little people talk all high. They didn't make the little people. They look like a little gooby talk all high.
They weren't all like,
Wasn't
this episode I was talking about how this is one of them interrupted podcasts, like talking over podcasts?
I think so.
Okay.
Why? You thought it was last week we talked about that?
No, I was just curious.
What are you talking about?
Are you saying are we interrupting you right now?
No, not at all. I was very amused by the previous 35 seconds and involved a lot of people talking over each other in a humorous way. It was almost sounded like music.
I thought we were kind of jamming on that.
I know. Yeah, it was good jamming.
They were layers.
They had the infamous Transporter Room 3 in this episode. And they just played that string music that was like
all that volcanic activity.
Well, so the DNA reaction reduction limits, right? So the DNA double helix mirrored that of a dilithium
deoxyribonucleic acid.
It mirrored that of the dilithium crystals. Were they dilithium or were they lithium? I think they were dilithium.
I think at this stage they're dilithium.
Okay.
This is 1973. And, they've matured. The lore
and,
has grown.
They got their shit together.
And
like
so,
a moss upon a soft Oregon rock.
So they could model what was happening on their DNA by looking at the dilithium crystals. And Spock goes, they're shrinking by a factor of 32.9. And did you notice Kirk? Without missing a beat, he goes, in other words, we're going down to 1/16 of an inch high. How do you figure that shit out so quickly? Factor of 32.9.
Because he's a captain, baby.
Well, Kirk was like a fucking valedictorian in Starfleet.
He's been to college,
he was
man.
I'm not saying he's dumb, but like
Kobayashi
even a super...
Maru, man.
Even a smart super person could would have trouble figuring that.
It's like 32. I don't
is
think
it canon that Kirk is really
it's
good
just
with math?
Fractions. That was back in the day. They weren't using the metric system.
Were they using new math? Is that why?
I can't state with confidence that it's canon that Kirk is good with math. But what I can state with confidence is back in the old BBS days when you had those MMMMMMMRPPBGs.
More babooz? Are you talking about MUDs? You're talking about MUDs.
Yeah, before the MMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMM What was it? Fucking so multi-mood?
Hardcore mud is spelled M-U-D-D, but this kind of mud is spelled
M-U-D.
Is it? I thought it was M-M-U-D.
I think it was just M-U-D. It was like multi-user
I don't have any idea.
No, you're right. It is M-U-D. It's a multiplayer.
Multi-user.
Real-time virtual.
Multi-user.
It's a multi-user dungeons.
Dungeons, that's right. Except there was a popular one. Now, children out there.
Listening. Children.
Childress.
You may not understand what we're talking about because this was pre-internet.
Well, this was during the transition.
Pre-worldwide.
It's when you could go on the Prodigy service and wander away into the wild west of the internet for like $5 a minute or something.
But I'm talking before Prodigy. I'm talking about BBSs. I'm talking about Telnet. I'm talking about
FidoNet.
I'm talking about text-based.
Yeah, back then they used the unencrypted, insecure. Is it insecure or unsecure?
I always think
of insecure about how you feel insecure. Anyways, they use the unencrypted version, Telnet. Insecure. They don't use Telnet anymore because it's not encrypted. Yeah, it's plain text.
You might not use Telnet anymore, but maybe some other people occasionally might use some Telnet.
They should upgrade.
Maybe some shady. It's
the same reason you don't use HTTP. Anyway. You should go to HTTPS. Always. Well,
yes, of course. In that case, of course. I'm not a fucking fool, man.
I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to the audience, and I'm not assuming that they don't know either. I'm just throwing it out there.
What I'm trying to convey is Star Trek related, because one of these MUDs, one of these multi-user
these hardcore MUDs,
was a Star Trek based MUD, and more specifically, it was a Starfleet based MUD where you would join up with a ship. And you became a crew member and you had to work your way up the crew. All the users were real people. It was all text-based. But the thing was, is I really enjoyed trying to become a part of this community because even back then, when I was quite young, I was a fan of Star Trek. However, there was so much fucking math involved because as a lower level crew member, before you worked your way up, you had to run the either the navigation or the weapons control or engineering.
Astrometrics.
And it didn't matter. Whatever section you were in, you would get commands that would literally involve math that you had to calculate in order to get the right answer.
Did you have to bust out your like TI-80?
You had to do bearings and others and engineering ratios of stuff, and you had to calculate stuff. And if you got it wrong, the result in the game would be that your ship would have a problem.
Oh no!
And you were having to. It was insane.
It is insane because like
it was not fun. By the way,
that's not a game.
The most realistic thing now, and I've never played it, but I've heard it's pretty awesome. And like you'll hear
ship simulator.
You'll hear everyone. Once in a while in like some kind of video game journalist article, it's like some 5-month war has been waging in EVE Online. EVE Online is the...
Oh yeah, I know all about EVE Online.
Yeah, it's like this, and they talk about these insane battles that that happen organically, usually having to do with somebody trying to steal someone else's trade planet or something.
There's a lot of shit.
Or some people, or fighting over who owns the planet or something. But even those, I don't think you have to do that math shit. It's different kind of complicated. I'm not saying it's just weird
to be like sitting at a computer typing in answers to math questions.
Maybe the deal is with EVE Online, they're like, it's not that people don't like complicated shit, it's that nobody wants to sit and like calculate.
We don't want to do it.
We don't want to do homework.
I mean, I could join the Navy and then learn how to sight in a Navy warship gun.
So
somebody's paying you for that.
So it's
exactly.
Like, so it's
and
like
I'm trained to do it, by the way, too. So I'm not just logging into a fucking weird Telnet server.
Yeah, so it's probably like they took a lot of cues from those MUDs, but then they got rid of all the shit that was kind of like
tedious and ridiculous.
And then they exchanged it for other cool shit or something. I don't know. Right. They really streamlined that
really
whole
did a number. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll get back to we'll wrap up things with the Territon incident and any other stray thoughts about Mud's passion. Stray thoughts. This has been an episode of Stray Thoughts. We'll be right back with less stray thoughts in a moment. Be right back.
Maybe more.
Okay, we're back.
Full spiroid wave analysis takes 8 years.
Man, you're all about the spiroid shit.
And then that's what Spock says, and then Kirk is like, bypass that analysis.
Spyro the dragon.
I'm going to say it again. Spock said...
Spock?
Full spiroid wave analysis takes... He says it takes 8 years for a full spiroid wave analysis.
Yeah, Spock?
And then Kirk goes, bypass that analysis, as if like... Like,
he's just like, don't fucking bother.
No, as if like it's hilarious that he gave the command to like, don't worry about it, because it's like as if like you're saying, okay, begin on that analysis of 8 years right away.
He's
you
like,
know?
Just don't worry about it.
Yeah, just don't worry about it. I thought that was hilarious.
Like, yeah, it was pretty funny.
I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, it is pretty funny.
It's fucking hilarious. Man,
write in at feedback at discussstartrek.com and let us know if you thought it was hilarious or pretty funny.
The Titanic.
we'll collate the fucking responses and shit. And I don't know.
Funny.
We'll put it on Twitter or something.
Yeah, I think that's
on
a good
a scale
two choices.
Of one to five.
No, just two choices, hilarious or pretty funny. Those are the two choices.
I mean, you know.
The Titanium Smiths of Libra.
Yes.
Made a non-shrinking bracelet for Chapel. Chapel, who has not been fired for drugging Spock.
Peculiar.
But,
in the previous episode, she poisoned a fellow officer on purpose with illicit intentions.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Eric's can't fit into his eyes to opticals. I like you so slowly see like them. It's like their equipment stops being
usable. I can't fit my eyes into the opticals.
Yeah. And then they go, reduce Mayday signals, 1 per 10 minute cycle. It's like, seems like an excessive amount of info, but I guess contributes to the atmosphere. Like they're talking about like how often to give the Mayday signals, you know. It's just it's all part
how
of
how often do you give these Mayday
it
signals?
Seems it all contributes to this overall feeling of like you're on a real ship, you know. It's all these little things they sprinkle throughout that may by isolated by themselves may
what do you mean a real ship
isolated by themselves they might seem excessive, but you put it all together and you've got this whole cohesive experience of be right there on the ship with Captain Kirk and
you
Spock.
You got a stew going.
You got a stew going.
You shouldn't isolate. You should hang out with people from time to time. You know, it's good just to see what's going on out there.
You know, at first they were talking about they couldn't tell if the bodies were contracting or the ship was expanding by a factor of 0.3. It seems like they could have used sensors to determine their relative size of their ship earlier on.
Could the sensors tell if when the bodies hit the floor?
No. Do you know Breel? Breel was over the intercom. She was saying, anyone, please, Mess Officer Breel.
Yeah, that was upsetting.
She had a weird high-pitched voice. Yes. I thought at that point I thought they were going for
the high-pitched voice
thing, but then they never followed up on that.
Yeah, it was just a terrifying eyewitness account of the shrinking horror, horror of shrinking, which was not fully conveyed in this episode. It was touched on in that what you're referencing there, the fact that if this was happening, no matter how professional you might be, I mean, Sulu's reaction was frankly the most realistic action. If somebody freaking out, being like, "I don't know what the fuck is going on. We're fucking shrinking, man. I don't know what to do. Let's shoot the planet."
Intersat code. What about that, huh?
I don't know. What about it?
He's talking about
nothing about it.
He was talking about intersat codes. They're talking about how the
intercept or intersect
intersat codes.
Intersat.
What?
Like intersatellite codes.
Intersatellite codes, yeah.
Intersatellite code.
Kirk goes, meaningless at the moment, Bones, but it was sent twice. Odds against that occurring in a totally random transmission are too high to ignore.
And I agree with him. I agree
absolutely.
With him in principle.
Absolutely.
It's good sound logic.
You know, there are ways to figure out if a probability is too high to ignore, and I think you can probably make a fair guess at this
look,
one at least.
Look, 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 all I'm going to say is this. This is all I'm going to say. which is this episode rocks in part because of things like that. That is a logical response. Okay, we got these letters conveyed to us twice that it's unlikely that they're random letters, so this means something. Point. Awesome point number one. Point number two, when Spock explains what you referenced earlier, Dan, that this was Terra 10.
Actually,
was,
Jesse referenced that.
Okay. Jesse referenced
that
it was Terra
right.
10.
Yeah.
And that it has been over time evolved into the term Terra 10. Cool.
That
all right.
That's pretty cool.
That's cool.
I'm down with it.
They didn't have to do that. They could have called the episode Terra 10.
Yeah.
This is just an extra little bonus thing that works because it makes sense because one would presume the language would evolve over the many generations.
It's pretty high level, I think.
Yeah. Mm. I think that Shrunken City, it reminded me, that's when I started really thinking about He-Man. I was wondering if that that structure of that.
It looked
like it was out of He-Man.
Either He-Man-ish or like out of the snorkels.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it did. It looked like it was some underwater snorkel. Yeah,
it was a snorkel land.
I think that's more correct.
But I think this is pre-snorkel.
Pre-snorkel.
I think 1973 might be pre-snorkel.
They probably used it
in the 80s.
Yeah. I didn't look up snorkels, but I think it's pre-snorkel.
So you're talking about how great earth cracks will soon swallow all. Once again, there's a great coincidence going on that the Enterprise stumble upon.
Technically, they wouldn't be earth cracks because it's not on Earth.
Well, Earth as in rock. And
no,
and
I understand. I'm just saying technically, though.
I see by your, the face. Other people can't see your face, but I can, and I can tell. But once again, it's a great coincidence that the Enterprise stumbled.
It's an excellent coincidence. High quality.
You didn't let me finish my sentence.
Yeah, I was just, I'm like a hype man. I'm helping out.
You don't know what I'm going to say.
There's no great coincidences. Look, there's just coincidence.
Look.
It's an excellent coincidence. You go, boy.
The conceit here is that we don't know what the other person is going to say.
I know. I'm hyping you up.
So why would you hype me up if you don't know what I'm going to say? We're having a conversation.
Because I'm confident that whatever you're going to say is going to be some brilliant ass shit.
No, but we're not. There's no audience. It's just us here. It's just us.
No, but we record this and we give it to the people.
No, but we pretend that that's not the case. That's how it works.
I don't pretend that.
No, but that's everyone's. That's like pro wrestling. Everyone knows that it's scripted, but we pretend that it's fun.
I put this on the internet and people listen to it.
No, but
a whole fucking shitload of people listen to this.
We don't talk about it. That's the whole point. That's the game we play. It's like giving a foot massage. It's too cool to talk about.
The holiest of holies.
Okay, it's a coincidence that the Enterprise stumbled on this group of tiny colonists.
We reference Pulp Fiction a lot. Yeah,
I know.
It's a coincidence that the Enterprise stumbled upon this group of tiny colonists right as all was about to be swallowed by great earth cracks.
I don't think it counts as a coincidence when they sent a distress signal and a ship responded to the distress signal. That's not quite a coincidence. It's a coincidence in the timing that there was the Enterprise was the ship that heard the distress signal and got there in time.
But then what caused the earth cracks?
Well, I thought the earth cracks was just some natural shit that was happening.
That's what I mean. Is like the earth crack. You saying that they sent the transmission out because of the earth cracks?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean,
it was a distress call.
I thought it was just happening.
They needed somebody to rescue their little city, man.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, that's my understanding.
Maybe I missed like the whole. I might have missed the whole plot of that episode. That might have been like the main part of the plot that I just missed because I'm fucking slow like that. They had this satellites with diamonds on. Did you see those satellites with the diamonds on them? Why are there diamonds on this?
I don't know. That was cool. But I was going to say that in Star Trek Picard, season one, we learned that they have an analog of cannabis that they call snake weed.
Snake juice?
Do they have? No, snake juice is in weed. Parks and Recreation.
Oh.
But in Star Trek, is snake weed. Now, do they have an analog for what are colloquially known as magic mushrooms? And if they do, are they called snake mushrooms?
Snake mushrooms.
They're
yeah.
called like they're called like snake frog mushrooms. Frog bones.
Frog bone. Frog bone.
I think you ate too many snake mushrooms.
Where am I coming up with this stuff?
Yeah.
Snake mushrooms.
I can feel it knitting, sir. They repurposed some kind of ear knitting thing to fix their.
Yeah, because it was all huge.
Yeah, I can feel them knitting. Sounds so gross. They were fixing his bones, and you could feel the knitting of his bones. Bones. What does that mean?
Look at that fucking bone.
Oh, so gross.
Are we in the odds and ends part? I think we're in the odds. We're getting close to the odds and ends.
One of these days, these Starfleet guys are going to get what's coming to them.
I did not know how to interpret that statement.
Yeah. I think you know what I'm talking about.
We know what happens to them. We know the conclusion of most of their lives. That's true,
yeah.
Scotty and Picard and Scotty
gets trapped in a transporter.
Yeah. And then he gets in a fight with Geordi because he's aggravating Geordi all the time. That's what he deserves.
That's what he gets. What he deserves.
Man, you get what you deserve. Odds and ends. Any other odds and ends?
That's it.
Does TAS always have Does TAS have the same amount of Does TAS have the same percentage of like end of the episode jokes that TOS has? This one was pretty bad. It was like Spock goes, "We came rather close to making it more than honorary, being being the title of those people."
Yes.
And Kirk was like, "Yes, I'd say just about a 16th of an inch close." That was a dumb joke. That was a dumb joke.
But here's the thing: it was a better joke in the previous episode. I can't remember the line now.
Oh, the one was, "Well, that's all right. I just hate to leave you all." All my loved ones.
Yes. That okay. That's the line.
That was pretty.
Okay.
That was pretty
so
bad.
Here's the deal. This joke about the 16th joke, ridiculous joke. It's a joke though. It follows joke construction. The mud line didn't. It was just like what?
Yeah.
All my loved ones. This doesn't make sense in the context of this particular story. Except for the fact that you had a love potion. But that's not how your love potions work.
It didn't
create like
it
a
just,
bunch of
all
loved
it was
ones.
Was referencing the episode. And, yeah,
man,
and
that was a fucking stupid episode.
TAS is like a distillation of TOS, and like by this point, like all the TOS formula is down, and so it's going to be in each TAS.
Yeah, that's
episode.
A good point. Actually,
they're not going to hit it every time.
You
but
don't.
Like,
you don't.
But
win,
they know what they're. Every, they yeah. know what beats they got to hit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess the
like Beat Saber.
The joke in the
so like they're going to have that joke at the end.
The joke in the mud one on the last week's we saw Mud's people.
Mud's women.
Mud's women. He goes.
Although if we were to do it in today's day and age, it would be Mud's people.
Yeah.
Yes, it's true.
I think we mentioned that last week.
And Kirk goes, I can't do that, Harry, but I will appear as a character witness at your trial if you think that'll help. And then Mud goes, they'll throw away the key.
Yeah.
You know,
it's and like, that's and a like, great joke.
That's pretty good.
I like that.
Although I think Mud, you know, if I were in Mud's shoes, I would be a little bit more stressed out because he was just like, oh, no.
Well, he knows he's going to slip out of it.
He knows he's going to get
he
out of it.
He knows the Federation's think, soft and they're just going to put him into rehabilitation that he can ignore.
He got out of a Klingon.
I will say that Mud's People episode had a lot more jokes, a lot more jokes at the end, because then there was that whole exchange between Spock and McCoy and Kirk that we were talking about. So there was a lot of packed in humor in the end of that one.
No,
but
I mean, yeah, it's a full TOS. Well,
they had the time.
And they, you know, they did more than one take. Sometimes I think these animated episodes, it's like, all right, Shatner's in the booth. 5 minutes later,
right,
he's done.
Yeah. He just does each line. Like,
he's
okay,
out of the booth.
Okay, next line. Okay.
All right. Any other odds and ends? Dribs and drabs.
I think there was one.
Where do they
blibs
come up
and bloobs.
With this stuff?
Where do they come up with this stuff?
Hey, where do you come up with this?
Where do you guys get off?
What
where
do you even?
Where do you get off?
It's 1973. We got to make a Star Trek cartoon.
Oh, when
dig up a bunch of old scripts and get some of the old script writers and just tell them to write some.
What's
change
Mares, some shit. And Mares on the previous one when she all put her paw on the view screen button? It looked like one of those cheesy cat paw effects when the people when you make like a real cat look like it's grabbing at people stuff.
Yeah,
her paw is all like
grabbing at people
because it comes out all straight and like.
Yeah.
You think she can drive? Do you think they let her drive the ship?
Can you? She can drive.
Cats
65,
can't fucking drive.
95. Where's that? How's it go?
Remember that?
I can't drive. 90, 85.
55.
Oh,
there was
what the fuck.
It was from back in the day.
I know. I guess the implication of that song was that he could not drive as slow as 55.
Yeah.
He had to drive faster.
Yeah. Sammy Hagar, man. That guy.
And everyone, and that was everyone agrees in the United States, you generally go 10 miles above.
I think that was the Minutemen album, Double Nickels on the Dime, is a reference to that.
Yes, that's exactly
because I
correct,
go exactly
sir.
55 miles per hour. There's a joke on that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There was a scene in the Cheriton incident.
And the dime means like Highway 10 or something.
There was a scene that it looked like when they were on the transporter pad. It looked like when they, I think it was when they transported this little city into the transporter room. I'm not sure, but I think that's what it was. It was close
up. Snork City.
I think it looked like they forgot to put in the floor on the transporter pad, so you were seeing outer space in the background.
I don't remember that.
I swear that like there's
outer space.
So like,
motherfucker's been into the snake shrooms.
So no, I swear. Yeah, I saw it, man. I saw it. Like, but like the floor wasn't there. It was just like stars, like
outer
in outer
space.
Space.
You said.
Unless they transported part of
in
outer
Star Trek.
Maybe they transported part of the background of outer space into the
it's
transporter
an animated
room.
Series. They can do whatever the fuck they want.
Yeah,
that's the cool part about the animated series. They literally can and do often do whatever the fuck they seem to want to do at a given moment.
They won't care that they're kids. They're kids. They just put a bunch of fucking bird aliens and shit.
Kids will eat that shit up.
Boyd aliens.
With the bird aliens. And have a guy with an arm coming out of his chest.
If you got the Boyd aliens, you got to like feed him the worms.
Looks like E.T. a bunch of years before E.T. came out. Call him Eric's, you know? Why do we call him Eric's? Because it's like, you ever know a guy named Eric? Why don't you have two of them?
I wonder if, like, one of the reasons...
It'd be called Eric's.
Eric's.
Eric Square.
The reason they do the men-on-women-only romantic relationship in the animated series, do you think it's because they're not good at animating it, so they have to summarize that whole history of what it means for a man and a woman to traditionally fall in love on TV? Like, that definition is already played out in people's minds. So all they have to show is
a
man...
You mean they just have to show Nurse Chapel jumping into Spock's lap and hoping he gets a fucking Vulcan green-blooded cock boner?
It's made for kids, so they're trying to, like, indoctrinate kids into the patriarchy.
Yeah, exactly. And they already have that definition established, and they can convey it just with that simple animation. But to explain the idea of two men being romantic with each other, that would require a whole new background that we have not been taught.
You're just saying that as you noted that
it'd be like a gold, like, sparkly background.
You know, they'd have to do all sorts of shit.
That Filmation reuses its animation, and so in a way you're arguing that the main reason that we didn't see any lovely homosexual romances in Star Trek TAS is just because Filmation didn't have any reference animations that they could copy.
Yeah, right. It would require too much explanation and too much animation.
It would require new drawings.
Yeah, exactly.
Although, I guarantee you, there were some young men who watched Kirk and Spock being chummy under the Mud's love potion.
That was pretty...
Got nice feelings.
I enjoyed it. At first I really forgot that they were just supposed to be pals, and then like when they
buddy old pal.
Yeah, after that they were like, my buddy, my good time boy. Like when they put their arms around each other, like then I was like, oh yeah, but at first it straight up seemed like they were you know, good for like sweet on each other.
The movies they're all buddies. Like in the movies,
yeah,
they're more buddy like.
Yeah, but in that episode
like,
they
like
were
earlier on their list.
In that episode though, they were more than just seeming more than just buddies at first.
Yeah, what happened is during the TOS,
it was the '70s.
During TOS and TAS, Kirk is playing Spock and McCoy against each other as potential lovers.
Right.
But by the time the movies come around, he's picked Spock.
He's already. Yeah,
that's why McCoy in the motion picture is like out of the picture, and he has to be called back in when you know they need a doctor. So I mean, that's a headcanon thing. You can believe whatever you like to believe.
I've got a ass cannon.
All right, non sequiturs aside, any other?
I've been eating a lot of beans lately.
Any other?
And corn.
Dan was explaining this prior to us recording the podcast that he had been eating.
Prepare for counter.
Great deal of beans and corn,
and rice.
Well, see, that's good. That's diverse. Because there was that one time you were like, I'm going to go on the all broccoli diet.
That was just for funsies, though.
Yeah, but you had a blog.
The all broccoli diet.
The blog got horrifically depressing.
He almost died.
Day two was like, oh, no.
He was like, no. He almost starved to death.
You can't just eat broccoli.
Right.
But now you know.
You couldn't wake up one day or something.
Yeah, by the end, so one of our friends helped me cheat, and he made me broccoli pasta, which was technically cheating, but I think he just felt so bad for me. That, like, he was like, come on, man, you got to eat some like something semblance of something other than broccoli.
All right, so any final thoughts on either Mud's Passion or the Territon incident, which... at least in my opinion, we have the Territon incident, wonderful, great sci-fi story, well-constructed, well-put-together, and then Mud's Passion, which is just stupid. It's just real fucking stupid.
They get
it's
to like be honorary Territons from now and forever.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
They came rather close to making it more than honorary. I'd say just about a 16th of an inch close.
16th, yeah, man.
Inches. All right.
I think we did that joke already.
Since we repeated two things that we already mentioned.
James Doohan.
I'll assume we've run out of material for this particular episode.
Alice assumes what?
What?
Exactly.
Whataburger.
Whataburger.
Where do you get off?
Okay.
Wouldn't you like to know?
Okay. So that's
why
end,
I ask.
That's the end of this podcast, the 113th entry, lucky 113.
Thanks for putting up with us.
Yeah. And we don't know what we're talking about next week yet, but
it'll be something great.
What are we going to do when there's two Star Treks at the same time?
We don't fucking know what
I
we're
going
to do
that. I was just afraid to even try to figure
we're
that out.
We're not even going to think about that. We'll have to come up with some sort of action plan.
We'll have to do two each week.
Some sort of action. It's we'll figure something out because we
luckily
Discovery
like,
is going to be co whatever like Picard and Discovery are going to be playing
weeks.
At the same time for 3 weeks. And then who knows? There might be overlap later too. So much fucking Star Trek they announced.
More
Strange
Star
New
Trek
Worlds is
ever.
Coming up soon, and then Lower Decks, and then more Prodigy, and this is all this shit.
I haven't been following Strange New Worlds. I don't know its deal.
This
it's
is like the
up.
Most. Most Star Trek
ever
that's been on ever
fucking like, ever yeah. Maybe not well maybe in terms of episodes I don't know because during when Voyager and DS9 overlapped you're talking more like 50 north of 50 episodes
because they did a lot of episodes.
Oh, this Strange New Worlds looks like more of a classic kind of Star Trek,
more episodic
Pike and Pike on the USS Enterprise.
Mm-hmm. So it'll be cool, but anyway, so that's going to do it for us this week. So
and Rebecca Romaine Lettuce.
She should play like Number One and Nurse Chapel. That'd be funny.
That would be funny. But I think that's not happening.
No. It wouldn't be that cool.
So we will you just look at the, you know, the Twitter website.
When is fucking
Facebook, etc. to find
the
out where we're
coming back.
Yeah, that's coming back soon. But we'll announce what we're discussing next week so you can do your homework and watch the episode. And to find that out, you can find us on Twitter at It's Got Star Trek. You can find us on Instagram at It's Got Star Trek. Facebook, It's Got Star Trek. YouTube, It's Got Star Trek. The website is It's Got Star Trek. It's Got Star Trek. You can sort and all
on Twitter.
Sorts of stuff.
Ooh, on Twitter, you can do it at not it. It
I know. I already
it's
did
not.
That.
It's at. It's got. It's not it. It's got Star Trek. It's at. It's got Star it's Trek. Got, you already did that.
Yeah, of course I already did that.
What about Instagram?
It's the same thing. It's at. It's got Star
Ipples
Trek.
And bananas.
Apples and bananas.
Apples
I like
and
it.
Bananas.
My favorite is apples and bananas. No, or is it apples and bananas? I don't know which one I like.
I like apples and bananas.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
You guys like all sorts of weird shit. Okay.
Opals and bananas.
So go awesome. To the old social media, you know, go to the podcast apps and rate and review.
Opals
that'd
and
be,
Bononos.
That'd be real fucking great. Rate and review.
Opals and Bononos.
That's
tell your
Opal
friends.
And Bonono.
Tell your
enemies.
Tell your enemies.
Your frenemies.
You know, co-workers.
Because an enemy of you is my friend.
Your religious denominations.
Co-workers are generally
adversarial,
I find.
You know?
They always hate you after you quit your job.
You're one of those people that puts out one of those neighborhood newsletters.
Letters. You're part of the team.
You can mention the podcast in the neighborhood newsletter. You know?
Yep, the neighborhood news. What about the zine? Do you have any zines?
Yeah, if you put out like an artistic
zine
about like punk rock, you can talk about punk rock bands. And when we're kind of like a punk rock podcast, you can toss in It's Got Star Trek and be like, hey, if you like punk rock music, you should listen to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Yeah. It follows.
Somehow, yes.
You can, you know, it's traditional. It's traditional for podcasts
trad.
To put the responsibility of marketing on their users, on their listeners, I should say.
Trad Trek right there.
Yeah, so.
Trad Trek.
So, it's up to you. It's up to you to spread the word about the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Weird. Why'd you say it like that?
No, man. It's late. I'm tired. Okay, so we will talk to you. Then next week. Bye-bye.
The 114th.
Well, yeah, we'll see. Bye-bye. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
We name you Honorary Territans now and for all time to come.
We came rather close to making it more than honorary.
Yes, I'd say just about a 1/16 of an inch close.